Stressed out? Need sleep? The cold weather bringing out those aches and pains or arthritis? There's never been a better time to try cannabis. Check out the greenhouse of Walled Lake and learn about the natural way to relax and escape all that 2020 stress. The greenhouse is locally owned, and they love helping people who are new to cannabis. They've got a great flower selection of the best Michigan-grown buds and the biggest pre-roll selection around. Don't want to smoke? No problem. There's vape carts, tinctures, concentrates, and everyone's favorite, edibles, like gummies, chocolates, peppermint bark, breath sprays, even the original Mackinac Island fudge. So check out the greenhouse of Walled Lake. 21 and over welcome, no med card needed. They also offer senior and veterans discounts and have a great loyalty rewards program. The Greenhouse of Walled Lake. That's greenhousemi.com. Hey, greetings, everybody. Happy Thursday. Welcome to a special edition of The Week That Was here on Deadline Detroit. I am your host, Craig Folly, as we look back at the year that was 2020. And of course, we can all sit there and say 2020 sucked. I think we can say that with a lot of confidence. But some good things did happen this year as well, and we're going to go through a lot of it. And also coming up a little bit later on, we will have our nominees for Schmuck of the Year. And the competition is fierce, everyone, because there are so many people that stepped up to fill that role, either sycophantically sucking up to Donald Trump or basically enabling his bad behavior. And remember, the rules are simple. We cannot name Donald Trump the Schmuck of the Year because we named the Schmuck of the Week trophy after him already because of his lifetime of accomplishment. That would be like saying, there's a reason they call it the Lombardi Trophy in football. Okay, think about it. It's the greatest of all time. And so therefore, he is not eligible. But there are lots of people that have done their best all year long to get nominated. And I just want to let people know, I put something on my Facebook page about a week ago saying that we're going to be doing this. And boy, did people come through. I gave them the option if they wanted to do it anonymously to send me private messages. And boy, it was the airing of grievances from Seinfeld. I swear.
Really?
A lot of very, very interesting ones, including some of our own Deadline Detroit people like me and some other folks that were there as well. But hey, that goes with the territory. Let me welcome my wonderful guests. Of course, Nancy Derringer is here with us once again. Thank you, Nancy, for being here, as you have for all 50 episodes of this that we did this year for the week that we are. This
is really?
Podcast number 150 for me this year.
Where's my trophy?
So, okay. Well, that's it. And your back pay is waiting as well.
Okay, thank you.
Alan Langle, of course, editor and co-founder of Deadline Detroit, is here as he is all the time.
Hello.
Thank you, sir.
Hello.
Attorney Steve.
Happy New Year.
Our MVP this year for guests. He has been on more than just about anybody else, but we always appreciate his input. Thank you, Steve.
It's a pleasure as usual.
And first-time visitor to this program, but somebody who is likely very familiar to all of you, Adolf Mongo, longtime political consultant and, of course, host of his own program on 9:10 a.m., the Superstation, from 10 to noon on Saturdays. Adolf Mongo, welcome, sir. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I was thinking about how we put together a show about the year that was 2020, I boiled it down. I said there were three main stories this year: COVID, the election, and Black Lives Matter. I think were the three big stories of the year. And there's lots of little subsets that go out through this. But it was funny because I was going back through some news stories, and it's like I almost forgot that we started this year with an impeachment. The president was impeached.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, but on the back burner, I've been watching all these news shows for the last few days, and they're like, oh yeah, by the way, the president was impeached. So one of those good things that happened this year, the president suffered a number of indignities as the year went on, including losing the election, which is the ultimate impeachment, although we're still duking that out, apparently. But the impeachment is sort of something that has escaped a lot of people's minds. And I wonder, given where 2020 has ended up, is this something we're going to remember about Donald Trump as much as we do about, say, Bill Clinton or the possibility of Richard Nixon being impeached?
I think there's been so much drama surrounding the presidency that I think a lot of people have even forgotten about that. I think it's just a footnote in a year of just total craziness that he helped preside over and help fan the flames of craziness.
I would agree. I mean, but, you know, this is not something that happens that often. I believe we've had, what, four possibilities of this, you know, in the history of the nation. It seems that this should be something that is a little bit more important. Go ahead, Nancy.
I would agree with Alan, but, I mean, people aren't going to remember it the way they do the impeachment of Bill Clinton because there's so much other stuff that went on around Trump that was all, that was equally appalling. And it's just kind of like one terrible thing in a complete, you know, in a parade of them. So I don't, you know, I think until you mentioned it, I had to, I, for some reason, I thought it was last year. No, it was in January. You're right. You know, and Alexander Vindman and all those, you know, those great witnesses and everything else. And so, yeah.
Fake news. Fake news.
I think part of the difference is Clinton at most committed one crime. That was perjury, lying under oath on, in his deposition. This guy, because he's a career criminal, has committed so many crimes, obstruction of justice. Who knows what the New York Attorney General is going to come up with. But the impeachment really kind of pales. It's like talking about a guy who gets ticket for jaywalking when he's got four murder convictions. I mean, that's kind of the reason I think I agree with Alan and Nance, that nobody's even going to think about that because, you know, wait till the pardoning finishes. We don't even know where that's going.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, Bill Clinton took the sting out of impeachment because most people don't even remember it, especially this young generation. They could care less. Look at who impeached Clinton, and all of them was hypocrites for having sex in the White House. Well, Bill said he didn't have it. But the bottom line is impeachment is not like it used to be. Clinton, Nixon was threatened with impeachment and he quit. I mean, he got on a plane and he left. He went to California. He didn't want any part of it. Now you threaten a person with impeachment, a president like Trump, who something is mentally wrong with the guy. He couldn't care less, and then took impeachment to another level. You know, buried it. It don't matter anymore.
But he had protection of the Senate. Basically, the Senate was like, "Yeah, go ahead and impeach him, but we're not going to convict." So didn't matter. I mean, back then, I mean, the idea that, you know, the Watergate thing. I mean, if that had come before the Senate, they would have been, "Are you kidding me? A break-in? You think we're gonna, you know, impeach over that? We're going to convict on that?" It's so different this time around.
It seems to me it's just the continued shattering of norms. I mean, things that would have been disgraceful at one point in time are now just considered to be part of the political landscape these days. And I mean, for me, I really struggle with that because you want to be outraged every day of the week with some of the dumb things that happen, but you have to put it in perspective as to how dumb the whole year has been and the whole 4 years of this presidency has been. And it's difficult to sit there and suggest that one thing is any worse than the other, because when they impeached him over the stuff that they did, I was like, man, it seems like he could go after him for some worse stuff than this.
You remember when Kennedy got elected and he appointed his brother attorney general, that caused an uproar.
That's right.
Trump brings his whole family and his businesses to the White House. Everybody's making money. Donald Jr., yeah. Eric, the daughter-in-law, the son-in-law. And he was holding these meetings with foreign dignitaries at his properties all over the country. So, yeah, he just took it to another level.
He certainly did. But, you know, obviously that did not derail his presidency. I mean, I do think it damaged him that certain people who maybe were on the fence a little bit about Donald Trump were looking at their 401k or their portfolio and saying, well, things are going okay. Started to realize that there were some norms that were being breached here, though. And obviously there was a lot of crossover voting, split ticket voting this time around, and him losing this election. You had a lot of people that voted against him, but still voted for their Republican representatives and senators around the country. Does anybody have an idea what that breaking point may have been for people with Trump, or was it just an amalgamation of thousands of little cuts?
I think it was his behavior. I think it was his tweeting. I mean, I would hear often from Republicans said, "I hate when he tweets. I wish he would not do that. He would have a lot better presidency without that." I think it was little things like that. Although, you know, in the end, he would have clearly won had there not been a pandemic, had the economy not gone to hell. He would have, I mean, he got 74 million votes with a pandemic, which he was totally incompetent in handling, with an economy that is just shattered, and he barely, you know.
Yeah, it was closer than I would have ever imagined it would have been.
Yeah,
I mean, I thought that Biden could potentially, you know, kiss the hem of 400 electoral votes. I mean, it could. I was really hoping for a decisive landslide, and we didn't get it. And you know, again, it's like, it's this impeachment is going to end up being the Razzie trophy of this presidency. You know, it's going to be the thing that the one, you know, the official thing that we look at when it was actually just a 4-year nightmare. And you say, what was the thing that broke it? I don't think impeachment changed a single vote. I think the pandemic was the decisive player in the election.
And here's the thing, you know, the pandemic, if you're looking for an indication as to the leadership capabilities of the president, this was one of those crises that demanded somebody to be on the top of their game. If you are indeed this genius businessman and this really smart guy, you could have developed a system in which we would now see vaccines actually being distributed in a rational fashion these days.
He is still screwing it up. I mean, he is still screwing it up. It's like, I don't know why I'm not seeing lines around the block, you know, at every hospital for people lining up to get vaccines, and it's not happening. It's like there were a few photo ops early on. Oh, Mike Pence got vaccinated. Thank God for that, you know, but that was it. And, you know, I mean, you guys up at the top of the screen, Steve, Adolf, oh, and the other guy down there. I mean, you're all on the far side of 65 at least. And like, have your doctors? And I know you're a fine specimen of health, Steve. But I mean, have your doctors spoken to you about when are you coming in to get the vaccine? No,
no,
mine hasn't.
Not many.
Yeah.
Back to what we were originally saying, though, when you were asking what was the tipping point.
Sure.
We can't just look at Trump. What was the tipping point? I can think of one person who was a hell of a tipping point, Stacey Abrams. I mean, I think the turnout that happened, you know, they keep talking about how many people voted for him, 74 million people or whatever. But really what she started, this is my opinion. I'm not any expert. Adolf knows a lot more about the political slant. But what she started when she ran and what she's continued to do in Georgia, I think, has spilled over to other places where Democrats and liberals live. And they're not sitting in their house like they've done on other occasions. You know? Well,
let's ask Adolf about that, though, because you work in every political campaign.
They call her the Harriet Tubman of voter registration. She has liberated the South and I say that because Black folks have been moving out of places like Detroit, New York, Harlem, et cetera, and they've been going back home to South Carolina, to Georgia, to Florida. It's like the great migration of Black folks at the turn of the 20th century, at the beginning of the 20th century, was coming up north. Now they're going back south. Now we're in play. People are voting. People are, they get it. And Joe Biden people didn't like Abrams. They did not like her.
No.
Because, wow, she wanted to move the ticket. You know, she should be quiet. She didn't do anything. If it wasn't for her, and if it wasn't for the Black voters down south, Joe Biden would have been a 3-time loser, would have been retired to Delaware. People would have said he needed to step down and not run anymore. They rejuvenated his campaign. And now he's up against a rock and a hard place on who he's going to put there as attorney general. That's why he hasn't announced it, because there's a lot of pressure on him to appoint a person of color in that spot. And I don't think they want to. They have their own Doug Jones or anybody else.
You know, I getting back to this sort of voter motivation issue, you know, the death of John Lewis, I think, had a pretty big impact as well, because we did refocus, at least for a few days, on the importance of things like the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Movement and people getting involved. And he was obviously a passionate advocate for getting people out and exercising their rights. And for a while, anyway, after his passing and seeing his casket go over the Edmund Pettus Bridge again, it does seem that got people motivated to register, and it did get a push to a point where, as you mentioned, Adolf, I mean, South Carolina, a state which, you know, there was a possibility that, you know, a black man was going to win in South Carolina. That's not something that we would have thought even a year ago.
Well, we got a long history. My folks on both sides, mother and father, from South Carolina. And South Carolina was the first state that had a black U.S. senator after the Civil War, during Reconstruction. Lieutenant governors, Congress people, et cetera. But Stacey Abrams learned from that election for governor, where they stole the election from her. Kemp stole the election. He was Secretary of State. He purged thousands of black voters from the rolls of the list in Georgia. And she learned from it. And the bottom line is she is using it as a tool that others in Michigan and Ohio and Illinois, et cetera, need to learn from. Georgia is in the spotlight. If they pull it off and the Democrats win, man, you gotta do something for this woman.
Well, I mean, we're going to know by the time we do this show next week, we will know the results of what's going to happen there in Georgia. It's pretty fascinating to watch.
What's everybody's thoughts about that on Georgia and the Senate race?
I'm encouraged by the turnout.
Yeah, I mean, I the turnout is good. Stacey Abrams factor is a good one. But what we've seen in this previous election, I was kind of shocked by how little of a blue wave there was, how many Republican senators like Susan Collins and, you know, Lindsey Graham, how overwhelmingly they won.
They got folks that said, okay, kick everybody out, but we like who we got. Graham been around a long time. Susan Collins been around a long time.
Right.
And, you know, so I didn't believe they was going to get kicked out. South Carolina, Democrats spend millions and millions of dollars, but Graham is like a fixture down there. He's been a liberal, he's been a moderate, and now he's been an idiot.
The wind does blow, and it changes direction every once in a while for Lindsey Graham. That is clear.
I do think, and I'm interested in Adolph's opinion because he knows a lot more than me. These two Republican senators down there, this guy Perdue is a laughing stock, and Loeffler is really not much better. And neither of them seem to be as entrenched in their own states as, say, Collins and Graham. But I think Ossoff has 100,000 votes to make up. Wasn't that about how far behind he was?
I look at Warnock, the Reverend, having a better chance of getting elected.
The last poll I saw on MSNBC, both of them were too close to call, but Warnock was slightly ahead, and it looked like.
But you have to look in the South. You can elect a brain dead dog to the Senate.
Tommy Tuberville. They did.
That should tell you something. You got all kind of crazies. They run for the Senate, and these people vote for them. The Republican Party is the home of Jim Jones-like supporters. If Trump got on there and said, let's all drink some poison, and he drank from a cup, but he didn't have the poison, you got folks that would drink the poison.
You're absolutely right.
Well, clearly, and they're still doing it, but Perdue and Loeffler, I mean, if I was running a campaign against them, I would just be hammering the fact that they got that private briefing about coronavirus early on, and they sold all their stocks or bought stocks based on basic insider trading. I mean, it's pretty darn clear. They didn't care about you. They didn't care about anything that your health. They just found a way to make themselves richer, which is not the purpose of being in the U.S. Senate, although it does seem to be the result quite often. Spend some time in the Senate, you end up wealthier than you were when you got there, which I don't quite get because the job only pays $100,000 a year. It's not as if, you know, I mean, I don't understand how this works.
If you're already making that much in a month off of your portfolio's capital gains, it's no biggie, you know. It's just dresser top change. So.
I think indicative of what's going on in the U.S. Senate, though, is that you're basically having people who have their own money can fund a lot of their own campaign. So the rich people get elected and it continues the cycle.
Which brings us around to a few of Trump's pardons, which gives you an idea. A guy like Mitch McConnell, who's never worked a day in his life, as far as I can see, has $40 million somehow. I don't know. And who does Trump pardon in addition to the killers and his own people? He pardons all those crooked Congress people, all of whom did some semblance of what we're talking about. Either they traded insider like Collins in New York, or they robbed from their campaign fund like Duncan Hunter in California, and then blamed it on his wife, a Marine, by the way. You can tell he learned a lot in the Marine Corps. When in trouble, blame it on your wife. Don't take any responsibility yourself. Semper Fi, right? You
know, don't call out the Marines now.
No, I'm not talking bad about Marines, that's for sure. But what I'm saying is that it's consistent with, if you put Trump on a polygraph, he would pass, and he would say those guys never committed a crime to begin with. Of course they took insider money. That's what you're supposed to do. Of course they stole from their campaign, just like Bannon did. And here they're going to pardon his butt too, I'm sure. Yeah. Same thing. It just shows you the attitude in that party.
Well, these last 8 weeks since the election have been quite remarkable, because we obviously the goal was to get rid of Donald Trump. If you are anywhere that leans, left of, Trump, I guess, because I don't know where he is. He doesn't make any sense. But anyway, you know, what we've been witnessing, first of all, the 8 week temper tantrum over the results of the election, the fact that he actually got a whole bunch of Republicans to go along with him because they're worried about their short term political future and whether or not Trump is going to unleash the hounds of misery on them if indeed they say one bad thing about him. And of course, all these pardons. This is just ridiculous. I love the fact that Jared Kushner's dad gets a pardon. Come on now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so ridiculous to watch what's going on. And I said something on this show about right after the election, right? I said, if I'm Nancy Pelosi, I'm thinking about impeaching the dude again just to get him out of the office before he can do any more damage, because he's doing damage.
A drive-through impeachment. You're absolutely right. These pardons have been appalling. They have been in many ways almost, worse. One of the worst parts of this presidency is the way it's get away with whatever you can. And then we're just going to give you this, this forgiveness. And it's like, if you object, it's like, because you're just not, you don't have that killer instinct to hustle the way these people do. There's been some really good reporting in the last few days about some of the ones that didn't get a lot of attention. There was some cop, I'm sorry that we seem to have lost Adolf.
Yeah, we'll get him back.
Screen, but there was some cop in Maryland, a canine officer who loved to set her dog on suspects of color.
What was the phrase she used? He needs fresh meat.
He needs to get a bite. It's like it's the old idea that if the dog doesn't know what he's there for, he forgets how to do it. So it's like it's time for him to bite somebody. So she's setting him on this poor Hispanic guy, this homeless guy whose only crime was, trying to be warm for the night. And others too. And so
she sicked him on a guy in a dumpster.
In a dumpster.
In an enclosed space.
So that was one of them. The Blackwater mercenaries were just, that was appalling. Absolutely appalling. I mean, one of the victims in that case, one of the 17 dead was a 9-year-old boy whose parents were given like some kind of nominal cash settlement from the United States government. They donated half of it back to like some sort of wounded soldiers fund, American wounded soldiers. And now, the people who killed their little boy are free. And it's disgusting. It's really disgusting. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, I think one of the most humorous things about the Trump administration was the slogan of, drain the swamp.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just so hysterical that the biggest crook around is going to drain. I mean, it's almost like, and not quite the same, but in Iran, where you had the Shah, you had this oppressive regime, and everybody wanted freedom and democracy, and they bring in the Ayatollah as a replacement. I mean, just the idea of all the horrible people that he brought to Washington, who he surrounded his campaign with, who were, the biggest crooks on earth, and this was his draining of the swamp.
Well, and they're all getting a get out of jail free card. So,
and he hired his event planner to run the housing department in the state of New York.
He tried to hire his. he tried to put his personal pilot in charge of the FAA. I mean, he's like, I mean, I just, I'm out of shock juice. You know, I just don't know what to say.
He would have been great in a Three Stooges movie or the Marx Brothers.
Yeah, but people like the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges.
Right. But they wasn't running the government.
But you know, you take a look at so we have a comment here from Lynn Walsh, who says, can I nominate the Swamp as the schmuck of the year? You know, the Swamp is not a bad one, because it is pretty thick. I do want to talk about a couple of other questions. Yes,
where's Barron?
Where's Barron?
Nobody talked about Barron. Where's Barron? Where's,
you know, Barron? What? I hope Barron gets to live the rest of his life in some sort of peace, because he doesn't seem to do anything. He seems pretty harmless, and he's probably got a miserable existence living with that guy as a father. Because if Fred Trump was an example that Donald is following as a dad, then hopefully Barron can escape the family curse.
The one thing we can give to Melania, you know, the sex worker of first sex worker of, is at least she apparently keeps this kid at her parents' house most of the time, because they, you know, the story's been going around Washington for now 4 years that she essentially lives with her parents, comes back to the White House for, you know, for her job applications. Yeah, her job obligations, and then goes back out. And she stays out there with Barron. And the excuse is it's closer to his school or whatever, you know, because Barron has to wait on the school bus, I guess. Anyway, the one thing she's done is she seems to understand that she needs to keep this kid away from his father as much as possible. And, you know, God bless her for that. So,
well, he slipped one time during there was some press conference, and he said, yeah. He goes, well, my wife has a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, she has a son. Yeah.
Getting back to the election year, though, for just a second, because this is something that I forgot about, too. But the first presidential debate this year was one of the more interesting viewing experiences I've ever had in politics.
I have to remember which one that was.
That was the one where Trump basically wouldn't shut up the whole time. He was called a clown. Will you shut up, man? That one. For me, it's like I'm watching that, and I'm watching the comments online, and there's half the people are sitting there going, yeah, you tell them, stick it to them. And the other people are saying, what the hell am I watching here? And part of me is just like, okay, you know, normally the calendar doesn't change things that much. You know, it's January instead of December, but you still have the same crap going on in the world that you always have. But this is one of those changes of the calendar where it does seem that we are going to get some sort of relief, at least from the madness that we've witnessed for the last 4 years. Some semblance of normalcy will return to our lives from a political standpoint. Maybe I'm asking too much here, but doesn't it already seem like things are starting to calm down? Like there is some sense of rationality around the way that Joe Biden is approaching this stuff so far. And that maybe we'll get a competent rollout of this vaccine coming in the next month or two.
Before you get to that, I want to ask a question to all four of you guys, because you guys are all political. I've read a lot of stuff where the authors are saying the best thing to do with Trump once he's out of office is to start to ignore him. Don't print the tweets. Da, 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 da. What do you guys think? Adolf, what do you think? Do you think that the media, forget Fox News and ONN?
Listen, Trump is going to, whatever Trump does, they're going to print it. People are going to cover him wherever he goes. He's like P.T. Barnum. There's a sucker born every minute, and there's a lot of suckers out there that like news, and sooner or later, he's going to slip up and do something or say something that is going to really make worldwide headlines. Wait on him to use the N-word on TV.
It may be coming, but you know, as long as he is seen as a viable candidate for 2024, I think he'll still be in the spotlight.
$200 million he's taking with him from the White House.
And he's still raising it.
Yes.
I mean, this guy
pretending. If you see I get the emails. It used to be like help us save the election. They stole the election. Now it's just like, hey, send us $50. We'll give you an autographed MAGA hat.
Well, I got one the other day. I got one the other day that said, like, this is your last chance to donate to help me out. This is your last chance to save my presidency. And I'm like, who's fallen for this, first of all, besides a couple of stupid senators that might actually raise some objection on the 6th, you know, which we'll get to in a little bit. But this is over.
this is you when you talk about are we going to, I want to answer Steve's question here for a second. Part of the problem, I think, and I noticed this, I cut my cable cord some years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago. And consequently, I never watch CNN, MSNBC, Fox, any of that stuff that you do. I get all my news from traditional print publications that have online, you know, websites like New York Times, Washington Post, I have subscriptions to both Detroit papers. And then, you know, it's
Deadline,
rare
Detroit.
And Deadline. Yeah, Deadline, of course. It's rare that I see a broadcast news anymore. And so, but I think those people at the cable news networks are not going to be able to give up Trump. And so I don't think they're going to ignore him, Steve. I think he's good copy or good copy. He's good video. Gets people upset. He brings viewers back. Advertisers like viewers. And I think that it's going to be really hard to get away from this guy.
I will say this, that he helped, I think, help bring a mojo back to the Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, I think 2016. I took a buyout from the Post in 2008. And when I left, I felt like the Post had sort of hit a low point. I mean, there were a lot of people taking buyouts, the papers, the presence of the papers, both New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, I think it lost some prestige. And then I think they became more relevant in 2015, 16, because of Trump.
No, because of Jeff Bezos.
And Bezos' money and his willingness to lose money
saying that people, I mean, I click onto the Washington Post website, you know, in the last 4 years, probably 3, 4, 5 times a day, and half the time saying, let me see what this crazy man is up to. He sucks up every news cycle.
Let's get back on track here for just a second, because, you know, Steve asked a good question. Like, will anybody pay attention to him after this is over? And I would suggest that we have no reason to pay any more attention to what this man says. Steve has a prop with him today, which I think is quite important, because we need to start talking about COVID and the response to it. Now, this man should be given zero credibility on anything, because he's lied, 15,000 times since he's been in office. But especially when it comes to COVID, and what is actually happening in this nation when it comes to COVID is real. Yet he has continued to deny or suggest that this is not as big a deal as it really is. Steve, I want you to read your little list of quotes that you brought with you today, because this is the president on COVID, complete with dates.
So this came from Politico. And I printed it out knowing we were going to have this discussion today. I thought people might be interested. It starts March the 6th, and it goes all the way through October 24th. There are about 15 different quotes, and they're all variations of the following. March 6th, it'll go away. March the 30th, it'll go away. You know, it's going away. We're going to have a great victory. April the 3rd, it's going to go away. I didn't say a date. I said it's going away, and it's going away. June 15th, at some point, this stuff goes away. And it's going away, July 19th. I'll be right eventually. You know, I said it's going to disappear. I'll say it again. September 15th, it's going away. And it's probably going to go away now a lot faster because of the vaccines. October 24th, it's going away. It's rounding the turn. I left some of the wording out, but essentially that was his predictions. And in fact, the title of the Politico article was "The Worst Predictions of 2020. And Trump won the first 15, obviously. The next guy was in 16th place.
I mean, that's my point. There's nothing that this man says that should be taken seriously, because he has been wrong on just about every single thing he has not completed. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. What has this guy accomplished in his presidency? And it was funny. The only thing he really accomplished, and this is something that I think I read in the Post the other day, as a matter of fact, it's true. It's like low flow shower heads are going away, apparently, and low flow toilets, because apparently the man has a problem flushing his toilet and it bothered him. So he got rid of some of those regulations.
I mean, does this really cover low flow toilets too? Are better. I hate to tell everybody this. I know there's this like pervasive myth that low flow toilets are, you know, are ineffective, but we have two of the three toilets in our house now are low flow
but
and you can put anything in there.
But your diet is not Big Macs and Diet Cokes all day. So, you know, I have no idea what's going on in that house. And that's the thing that bothered me the most about this story is that it actually made me think about Donald Trump's bathroom habits, which is not something that I ever want to do again. But seriously, the COVID response was so bad and has been so bad since day one. And we look at the death toll and you know, we're losing people all the time, every day, thousands of people. And it's just we're numb to it because it's just a number on a screen somewhere.
Oh, I don't think we're numb to it, Craig.
No, I don't think so.
If you're talking about a guy like Trump, the career criminal, the man has no empathy for anybody. He's numb. We're not numb. All of us, I know for sure, Adolf and I know any number of people who have passed because of this disease.
Donald Trump need to be taken to The Hague and tried by a world court. There's no question that he is a mass murderer. We got all 300,000 people died on his watch. And he said, it is what it is.
Right.
The guy.
Well, and I mean, I don't understand this thought process of leaving everything up to the individual states. You know, and like I said, we're starting to see the weakness of that system right now when it comes to the rollout of the vaccine. They're way behind the schedule that even the companies say that they could produce enough to get it out on the scale. But getting the distribution channels in place, the logistics of this, you know, it shouldn't be this difficult. And there
we saw the problem with states handling anything during the Civil War. you do need someone like the federal government to have a policy that fits all. And Trump said every person is for themselves. Look at Florida. You had senior citizens sitting at 4 o'clock in the morning trying to get a vaccine.
You know what? It should have been from the very beginning. There should have been a group figuring out from start to finish to the shot in the arm to put together a template for the whole United States. We've got kids who are, and not kids, I mean, I speak. We have young adults, 25, 30 years old, who are doing logistics, who are brilliant at it. All around the country, they're making $300,000 to $400,000 a year. We have the knowledge. We have the wherewithal. It should have been put together. Instead, the administration says, well, we got out the vaccine. It's up to the states to figure it out. They're so incompetent. They don't understand. It doesn't matter if you get the vaccines delivered to the states. If they're not getting in people's arms, it's worthless.
Right.
Well, I don't know if you guys saw last night on Ari Melber on MSNBC. He had a number of quotes from Bill Gates, not really quotes. They had him speaking to a conference in 2015, and literally he warned, he spoke about exactly this. It was after Ebola, and he was talking about, well, okay, Ebola, but it's been contained kind of, but there's going to be a plague coming and blah, 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 and we need to do these things. The government needs to set aside money, and it was pretty prescient listening to him. And of course, what did we do? Absolutely nothing.
Well, we did do something. The Obama administration, I believe, in fact, I know I read this somewhere. They do these like trainings during the transition, or they should do these trainings. But the Obama administration did these trainings for the incoming Trump people. And I believe the exercise that they worked out was a pandemic exercise. And it was like, okay, this is the point at which you have to mobilize this branch of government. And then you have to do this. And then you have to do this. And apparently these Trump morons just sat there with their hands, you know, crossed across their chests. And they literally were handed a set of binders that was the pandemic playbook. I think it had it on the front, the pandemic playbook, and they threw it out.
But, you know, that's normal when administrations change. I just look at what happened in Detroit when Dennis Archer took over. There was a playbook for Devil's Night. There was a playbook for the snow removal. And Dennis Archer and Freeman Hendricks threw it right out the door. And guess what? The snowed in at the auto show. Turned down the city on the east side. The Devil's Night, because it took Coleman Young 20 years to get a handle on Devil's Night. and they threw it out. And then they had to go back and say, oh, you know what, we got to start over again. But that's just small fries to what this guy did. They looked at Obama. I think he's in love with Obama, jealous of Obama. He want to be Obama. You know what? And so they just said, we're not keeping anything. We're throwing everything out as Obama. So here we
go. That was absolutely true.
And it's, he basically spent 4 years trying to take down Obama's legacy a few notches. And all I think has happened is that it's sort of, we're going to look back on President Obama much more fondly than we would have anyway. I mean, once you see what came after it, you're like, holy crap. This guy was actually really competent.
Is why I love those little fleeting photographs of Melania sitting next to Obama. I think it was a George Bush Sr.'s funeral, with a genuine warm smile on her face,
this is a nice person.
Someone just chap his ass.
$200.
I think it was interesting. I love the little story we've talked about it before, I think, about George W. sitting next to Hillary Clinton at the inauguration. And when Trump, after the speech, Bush turns to Hillary and says, "That was some weird shit."
Yeah. It was the American Carnage speech. I remember watching that, just saying, wow, I didn't realize things were that bad in America. All right. Well, we don't have a ton of time left. And I definitely want to get to this, too, because this was, I think, a hugely important year in civil rights in this country. The Black Lives Matter movement was huge. It's obviously ongoing. There are still issues that need to be addressed. But we are actually getting real conversation happening on things like criminal justice reform in this country and police reform. And whether you want to call it defunding the police or police reform or whatever you want to call it, real conversations are taking place. I don't know if changes are happening fast enough, but at least we're addressing for the first time in a long time the reality that it is for African-Americans in this nation. It is an uneven playing field. It has been forever. And a lot of people just don't want to admit that that's the case, but it looks like at least maybe, and Adolf, maybe you disagree, but it looks like maybe people are actually talking about this. I don't want a lot of this stuff to get talked about in coronavirus, but
we still got Black people being shot down in the street for selling cigarettes, for someone calls, the police department said, oh, it looked like somebody broke into that house, and the police come and they end up killing the owner. Counterfeit a $10 bill, a $20 bill, dead. Failed to change, put on a blinker to change lanes, dead. And you know what? We still see it. Just happened last night. Minneapolis police just killed another person on a traffic stop. Listen, when is this going to end? The police department have been an army of occupation in all these Black communities. I always say the longest undeclared war in America is the police department versus the Black community. The first organized police department was organized to do what? Catch runaway slaves. And they got that mentality, still have that mentality, that when you see a Black person, you're supposed to shoot first, ask questions later. But yet you can get Dylann Roof, kill 9 people in a church, and they take him to Burger King, let him eat, and then take him to jail. All the shooter in Aurora, Colorado, they took him alive. But yet it seemed like you got to kill somebody over having some cigarettes in their hand, and they were selling them to people on the street. Something's wrong with that. We were able to change the police department.
I was talking to a friend who's a Black police officer, and he was saying back in the old days, he goes, we fought, it was hand-to-hand combat, with somebody who was, there was a problem. He says, the problem is a lot of the white officers are afraid of Black people. And so you have white officers in
the city. Become a cop in Detroit. Be a cop where you grew up at.
Right.
It was a time where Detroit used to recruit cops from Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia, cops, because they knew how to handle Negroes in their community. They brought them here. Right. So listen, William had to deal with that. I hated to come downtown Detroit when I was a kid because I got stopped 3 times riding with some friends, laid on the ground by the Big Four. Right. So one time it was twice in 20 minutes. I said, I'm never coming back.
And what made the difference? One of these. You know,
so we talked. We've talked about this when we had, any number of the killings that Adolf's talking about. Nothing's going to change until you change the mentality, not just of white cops, but the police officers in general. And the reason is, as we talked about before, you've got to start forcing them to understand. You got to stop giving them awards for how many arrests they make, how many dope houses they bust, how many people they drag in off the street, because. Like Adolf said, almost every one of these killings, almost every one of them, at best, at most, they're looking at somebody for misdemeanors. Literally, Eric Garner is selling cigarettes on the street, and that's worthy of police attention and of arrest. George Floyd goes in and some shopkeeper claims he gave him a phony 20, and that's worthy of kneeling on him and killing him. The shootings that you're talking about in the various communities, almost every one of them is messing with people, or we would say in our day, fucking with people for nothing. And until that mentality changes, the race part, you know, that's an ongoing struggle for sure. But that mentality in the police department has to change. We talked about it at length back when this subject first came up. Until that mentality changes, until they start looking at themselves, and Adolf's exactly right, they're not an occupational army. I think the Detroit police do a lot better job. Just based on what I see.
Because it took 20 years under somebody like Coleman Young.
That's
enough.
That's exactly enough.
Because that's exactly. When during the 67 rebellion, you had the four white cops that executed four young teenagers who was trying to get out of the line of fire. They found them in a motel with some white prostitutes, and they executed them, murdered them. And they got off. And that was, that was the norm.
I do want to ask this question, though. I mean, when you look at the events of this year with Black Lives Matter and the awareness campaign around it, was it successful in any way? Because I think a lot more people are aware of the problem than they might have, or they can't bury their heads in the sand anymore about the problem the way that they used to. But when you look at the turnout and the number of people that were out on the street all across the country, the fact that you have Black Lives Matter painted on massive streets in front of the White House, as a matter of fact, was it successful? Is it going to help?
Go ahead, Steve.
It only matters if it affects the police department. It's the police officers who are doing the things that we've been talking about. The fact that people run around and say, if all the cops got Black Lives Matter painted on their shirts, it doesn't matter if they're still going to pull stunts
like we've been talking about.
You're going to grab guys selling cigarettes and kneel on them until they die. I don't care what you have on your T-shirt.
And if you drive a car, in 2016, I had a new car I bought, a Mustang convertible, got stopped on Jefferson, and the cop, who was a black cop, came to me, say, get out your car. This is a stolen car. You a thief. We got a warrant out for you in Flint. Call me all kind of names. They had 8 police cars show up because I said, I want to see your supervisor. And basically the court, because I said, I'm a sue the city, but the court, federal court say, oh, he didn't do anything wrong. You know what? So I can get cussed out, called a thief, etc. But the city had to come back and say you didn't have any tickets, you didn't have a warrant, your insurance was valid, you had a driver's license. Sure. This is what people, black people, got to go through. I won't drive through Livonia because they got the SS patrolling the streets. As soon as they see you, boom, they stop you. And you know the places where you don't want to drive. You drive down 8 Mile Road on the Detroit side, turn down one of those streets, here come either Warren, Ferndale, or Hazel Park. They'll drive 10 blocks down and give you a ticket.
So here's one other thing. I'll tell you, when we'll have made progress, and Adolf knows this as sure as he's sitting there, we'll have known we've made progress when people like me don't have to have a conversation like I had with my son when he turned 16. and tell him to be careful out there when white caps stop him, yeah, for the obvious reason, right? That's when we'll know we've made progress, when black people and people with mixed kids can feel comfortable with their son out driving out here in West Bloomfield or wherever they go. That'll be the test.
To serve and protect should actually be the goal here.
You know what I found sort of ironic and interesting is in the beginning of all the Black Lives Matter demonstrations in Detroit and other places, but you know, in Detroit, where you had cops who were like abusing the protesters. And at the same time, earlier in the day, they'd be kneeling in solidarity with them. And then later in the day, they're throwing them down on the ground and they're smacking them around and shooting them with, rubber bullets and doing all kinds of crazy abusive things. And I thought, this is about police abuse, and they are doing, abusive things to the demonstrators.
I'm going to be the Karen American here and just inject a note of optimism into this discussion, because you're all right. But at the same time, if we say that beginning to deal with the problem, the first step in dealing with the problem is acknowledging that there is a problem, that I think has been significant this summer. And, as the Karen American who lives in Grosse Pointe, I can tell you there are way more Black Lives Matter signs out there right now than there were Trump signs. And, that's got to count for something.
For me, I don't disagree, but for me, I think, the proof is going to be in what people are willing to do to address the problem. Exactly. Are people going to be willing to give up their perceived sense of security and protection in order to address this problem in a rational and informed way? And so that's always where, that's why there's so many people that still voted for Trump. They're like, I hate the guy, but I still like my tax cut. So I'm not going to do,
But also listen to what the response was when he said stupid shit like they're gonna build a low income housing project in your suburb. I'm here to save your suburbs. I mean, people just laughed in his face. I mean,
but people, some of those people took it as law.
Right.
It's like the civil rights movement. You had a lot of white people going south.
Movement anymore though. It's 2020, and it's like
they feel the same attitude. They go south and they protest Jim Crow and segregation. Come back up to Birmingham, Michigan, and somebody black moved next door to them. They even move out, go someplace else.
I think things are different. Now. I really do. I respectfully disagree with that.
You still got the hypocrite white liberal who, they mean good, but it don't work anymore. I was glad to see these young folks out in the street doing what they supposed to do. And they were brave to do it.
And I just want to see what the follow through is on this, because we heard a lot of talk from elected officials and police departments and everything else about things that they were going to do differently. And we'll see if they actually do it. I, for one, think we really need to go after the police union and the protection that they offer some of these officers. That's something that definitely needs to be looked at. And I think it was Portia Roberson who was on the program who came up with the best suggestion I've heard this entire year on how to deal with this. Make sure that any payouts from violent police actions come out of the pensions of the officers. That's the first thing that would spur action. And it was a great idea. And I was just like, that's fabulous.
It's like making the whole thing.
Don't give them the government protection.
That is a great idea. And for those folks that have spent 20, 30 years in jail for a crime they didn't commit, let the prosecutors that prosecute them go to jail.
That's an interesting one too.
The bottom line, when you lie, you got police line, you got the prosecution line. We got a lot of changes to make to this criminal justice system.
Well, and I will say this though, as a glimmer of hope kind of thing too, I do like what I am seeing when it comes to the legislature on expungement of records for a lot of people, especially for misdemeanors and low-level drug offenses. I think that's way overdue and a big change that we're likely to see, I think, across the country over the next few years as more people realize how much money we have wasted on the correction system over the decades in this country, especially in the wake of the whole, you know, really the Reagan era when all this started, and, you know, the lock them up, three strikes, you're out mentality, and the war on drugs and everything else, which is
Joe Biden was part of that.
Yeah, of course he was.
So was Clinton.
But you can have an epiphany and change your mind on something. And sometimes political expedience is a good thing when it comes to that sort of stuff, because you know, it was the wrong thing back in 1994.
Now go back when he got with Jesse Helms and those folks down there against Court out of bus.
Jesse Helms reference. I like it. It's been a while since we had to think about old Jesse. All right.
I was just saying, Alan, real quick. Adolf was mentioning about putting the prosecutors in jail. In the federal government, we saw during the post 9/11, where the prosecutor convicted the sleeper, the alleged sleeper cell here of terrorists, and it ended up that he withheld information. Didn't share it with the defense, and they did criminally charge him. He was acquitted, and Steve, I know, remembers that. But anyway, so it isn't out of the realm to go after prosecutors if in fact they have done something inappropriate.
All right. Well, we've got to wrap this up pretty soon. And we do have to get to our nominees for Schmuck of the Year. And like I said, this was one of the more difficult things I've tried to do all year, was come up with one single person that outshines them all. Nancy's got her hand up.
No, I was just going to say, I hope everybody has like some backups, because I think there's
the obvious.
There's some standout schmucks.
Captain Obvious.
If you get called on last, you're gonna lose your schmuck.
Well, here's the thing. I've got some, and I'll start with this because it's not mine, but I asked my listeners and viewers for this, just to get some ideas on where they wanted to go. And it some of these may obviously overlap with your choices, but this is interesting. So I had this one. This was whoever initiated the lawsuit that reversed the governor's rules on anti-COVID measures that led to a spike in state numbers again. That was their schmuck nominee. We also had, of course, Rudy Giuliani, Mitch McConnell, Bill Barr, Betsy DeVos, Rudy Giuliani again. We had JFK Jr. for being a QAnon guy. Kayleigh McEnany is one. We had, of course, a number of calls for Moscow Mitch. Joel Osteen for taking his $4.4 million personal protection loan. We also had Joyce Meyer Ministries. Remember, she was the spiritual advisor to the White House, right?
Paula somebody. Oh, well, what's,
I'm sorry?
Paula somebody.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right.
And I cast you out. I cast the demons out. That woman, yeah.
We had a Stephen Miller nomination. We had a Proud Boys nomination. We also had, as a lot of people just said, Kelly Loeffler. The more I learn about her, the more I want to do. So that just gives you an idea of the people. Oh, and of course, the guys who wanted to kidnap the governor. We didn't even get to that. I mean, that's like, normally that would be a giant story, too. But those are just some of the takes that we got from the audience there. So there are lots of choices. So who wants to go first with their schmuck?
I just want to note that it could have been that Trump lost Michigan because we locked up all the people going after the governor who would have been voters for.
That's right. <Trump. laughs>
let Nancy go first.
Okay. You ran down my top three like immediately, which was McConnell, Bill Barr, and Rudy Giuliani. So I'm going to go for a different one. I'm going to go for Newt Gingrich, because I think that he is a perfect example of a man who's evil, even though he's largely left the stage. I mean, he's still out there and he's still appearing on Fox News, but you know, he's not the mocker that he used to be. But he is a perfect example of a man whose schmuckitude and the evil that he does has reverberated through a generation now. And you know, when I heard you guys, this came to me and I heard you guys talking about how the Bill Clinton impeachment was entirely political, that it wasn't really based on any kind of serious wrongdoing. You know, it was a man who lied about a blowjob and, you know, and it snowballed from there. But that was the work of Mitch McConnell. And I think this divide that we're also concerned about, I'm sorry, not Mitch McConnell, Newt Gingrich, this divide that we're also concerned about is absolutely, he was the man who stood there with the wedge and the hammer and made the first chip that started it going.
It's so, like your windshield, you know, that first rock hits the windshield and it starts
spider web. So I'm going to say Newt Gingrich and let it go with that.
For being the architect of the madness. Yes. I get that. I get that argument. I think that's actually a very solid, solid case you laid out there. how about Mr. Fishman?
No, Langle next. You guys are the regulars. Adolf and I get to go last.
Okay.
All right. You know, there are, like you say, there's so many. I mean, Mitch McConnell, I think it's vile, but I'll say William Barr. You know, I know somebody in Washington before William Barr stepped in and said, look, he's going to do a good job. He's a stand-up guy. And I thought he, maybe not since John Mitchell of, you know, Nixon's attorney general, had we had such a crooked attorney general. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, he should be indicted for whatever. I mean, it's so shameful what he did to that Justice Department. And so I think he did. He helped do a lot of damage to the institution there in Washington.
If he did get indicted, I guarantee you he's not getting a pardon after what he said about the election results. So
right.
You can't count on that, unlike some other people. Rudy Giuliani was such an easy pick, but the only reason that he's not going to get it from me is that he was so incompetent that he didn't do any real damage. The fact that this is a guy who brings these horrible people into court and introduced us to people like Melissa Carone this year, but at the same time, he's got his hand down his pants in a Borat movie. I mean, this guy is just such an idiot, and he's clearly buzzed half the time. He's got stuff coming down the side of his face. Had he been reasonably competent, he could have done some serious damage, more than he did. Right. But I'm going to say Stephen Miller, just because it seems to me he is the guy behind all the racist stupidity that I see in the White House. He's the one speaking in Trump's ear, telling him, hey, do this, say this. He and Steve Bannon are the two people that are really the architects of the racism that was at the forefront of this administration, which is what I think was the most disgraceful part of these last 4 years and of this year in 2020, the blatant pandering to the racist base of the Republican Party. And yes, Republicans, that is a big part of your party right now. You welcomed them in. Now you're stuck with this crap and you're going to be dealing with Donald Trump for another 4 years as kingmaker in your party. Because assholes like Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon had the ear of the president and told him this populist crap that a bunch of you bought into, and you almost took the country down as a result. That is my schmuck of the year.
Powerful. Yeah.
Adolf, you want to go next?
I'll let you go last.
Go ahead.
My schmuck of the year is John James. That we were brain dead in Detroit when he started putting up billboards saying he's Detroit bred, not you, Steve. that he wanted to come back, and all of a sudden, you know what? Court the black vote. No way. He did a hug on Donald Trump that would have made Sammy Davis Jr. proud when he so yes. This young man who come from a family of Democrats who has a resume that's impressive, but yet it became a boy toy for the DeVos family. And he embraced these racists who pushed his run for not once, but twice for U.S. Senator. Listen, Gary Peters was right for the taking. If they had the right candidate, John James wasn't the right candidate. He's a smug because I don't want to see him again running for a third time.
Amen.
All right. So John James gets a vote. That leaves it up to Steve Fishman.
Okay. Before my vote, I have to just chime in on Craig's pick. The amazing thing about a guy like Stephen Miller, the racist bastard that he is, this kid was born Jewish. He's still Jewish as far as I know. And for Alan knows this, for a Jew to be a racist, in light of what the Jews have gone through in history, and there's got to be somebody in his family that came from either Russia or Poland or Germany fleeing, and for him to behave the way he behaves, I have to say I have a hard time disagreeing with you. But all of the nominees that you talked about were the people that I was thinking about. But it was kind of like a horse race, and everybody's running, and everybody's running. And in the last 2-3 days, here came Secretariat, also known as Josh Hawley, to lead the race. And here's the thing I love about Josh Hawley. And hypocrisy, you know, God, Adolf's been in the political business for a long time. I know he's seen hypocrisy up the wazoo. But the hypocrisy of pretending that you are a populist who is caring about the masses, this guy's background was he went to a prep school, not to Mumford or Northeastern or even Oak Park High. He went to prep school, followed that up with some time at Stanford, and matriculated in the law at Yale Law School, and he's a populist. So he wins it with that Secretariat run back in 1973 to get to the line first. But I will say this as well. I'm overjoyed that he did it because I can't wait. January the 6th, I'm going to be perched in front of my television set and watch these Republicans have to come up there and vote.
Right.
And, yeah. Because they're, you know how they're going to be. They're ballless to begin with. So they'll be able to twist back and forth real easy. Trump over here, sanity over there. And I can't wait to see it. So he's the schmuck of the year for me. But I'm glad he is, and I'm glad he did what he did.
Well, yeah, quite the finish there for him there. But, you know, I'll tell you what, by this time next week, when we're doing the show next Friday, we are going to know the makeup of the Senate. We are going to know, well, we might. It depends on how long it takes him to count the vote. But we're also going to have, of course, Joe Biden certified by Congress, even though there's going to be some shenanigans and stupidity around that whole thing as well. And we can actually start to count down the days to which Donald Trump will be escorted from the White House. And hopefully he just, you know, I don't want him to show up at the inauguration. I just don't. You know what? You don't want to be there. And I don't think anybody wants you there either, sir. So it's
my like time for me. You know, if only we could see Ivanka like carrying a box out, you know, or something like that. But of course, that would ruin her manicure.
Well, very true. But we won't have them to kick around much longer now. Will. Yeah. All right. Well, we've got to say thank you to everybody. I want to thank Michael Lucido, by the way, who engineers this broadcast for me every week. We, I think, did 50 episodes of the week that was this year, which is great. 150 podcasts total for the show this week. So thank you to everybody who's listened, chimed in, supported us throughout the year. It's a big deal. We really, really do appreciate it. And of course, Deadline Detroit, deadlinedetroit.com/membership. Keep this little ragtag bunch afloat because we've been doing some great coverage all year. The Beaumont stuff has been amazing this year, and there's been a great rundown all week of some of our bigger stories of the year. And it really is a nice look back at things that happened around here and something that I think would be useful to all of you to check out on occasion. Right. DeadlineDetroit.com.
The Star Wars cantina of Detroit journalism.
There you go. I kind of like that. That's a great analogy.
Let's not forget Adolf Mongo at 9:10 a.m. on Saturday mornings.
I was just about to get that as I thank my guests for being here. Adolf Mongo, again, he's 10 to noon on Saturdays at 9:10 a.m. Superstation here in Metro Detroit. Adolf, thank you so much for being with us. We'll have you back. Sure, really appreciated it. Steve Fishman, again, we appreciate your contributions this year. It has been great to have you, and we always like having you on the program, and you will be back as well, sir.
Adolf and I will be looking for – put our check in the mail. We'll be looking for it.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be right behind your $2,000 stimulus check. That's – oh, wait, that's not coming because – I don't have a clear path to getting you a check. I'm sorry. What's that?
Nancy, I loved your article on Mitch Albom.
Thank you. Thank you. I got a lot of hate mail. Yeah.
He probably had his relatives call. but it was long overdue. That was pretty good. I appreciate that. That one was pretty good.
Also, thanks to the Greenhouse of Wild Lake for their support of this program. I do appreciate it. And Alan Blango. Wow. Weird feedback we're getting there. But that's all right.
But that's all right.
2020 in a nutshell. Zoom problem. 2020, do not let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. Happy New Year, everybody. And,
stay home safely.
Okay.
Looking for the latest news and information about our great city of Detroit? Head to DeadlineDetroit.com for one-stop shopping for the most important stories of the day.
Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in town, providing original reporting, videos, and podcasts that keep you in the know about everything happening in Detroit. Become a member today, and you'll automatically be entered into a drawing for prizes, including gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Go to deadlinedetroit.com/membership.